I want you to imagine a scenario for a second. It's, highly relatable, probably something you've experienced at least once, or at least really dreaded.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone has that fear.
Right. So you are driving down a busy highway, you're making good time, you've got a deep dive playing, and you are just completely in your zone. And then suddenly you hear it.
That awful sound.
Yeah, that unsettling rhythmic thud, thud, thud of a blown tire, or I don't know, maybe a violent metallic clunk from deep inside the engine. Instantly, your heart rate spikes. The adrenaline just dumps into your bloodstream.
And that immediate rising panic sets in.
Exactly. You grip the steering wheel, you're fighting the momentum of the car, and you somehow manage to limp over onto this narrow strip of asphalt on the shoulder. You throw the car in park, you take a breath, and then you reach for the door handle to get out.
Which is, well, it's the exact moment that everything changes. Because that reach for the door handle, I mean, it marks the transition from a mechanical inconvenience to a literal high-stakes survival situation.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we are diving into today. We are unpacking the hidden catastrophic dangers of what happens the absolute second a driver steps out of their car on a highway.
It's a really critical issue. And to understand this, we aren't just talking in abstractions here.
What?
We're looking at a deeply sobering, widespread highway phenomenon that safety and engineering fields call the secondary collision. We're going to explore why our most basic human instincts, like the things we are practically hardwired to do in the aftermath of a breakdown, often put us in the greatest possible danger.
Because it's incredibly counterintuitive, right?
Completely. The things that feel natural and right in that moment of stress, those are precisely what trigger the most devastating outcomes.
And we saw exactly how unforgiving this reality is in a recent, really tragic incident that has brought this issue to the forefront for highway safety experts. This happened on the New York State Thruway in Clarkstown.
Right, specifically near exit 14.
Yeah, exit 14. A newly released dash cam video captured the moments before a 45-year-old man named Bravo Nondo was fatally struck.
Yeah.
And he was simply standing outside his disabled vehicle.
It's just awful. And the other driver involved in this incident was an off-duty NYPD officer, Greg Album of Nanuet.
Which is an important detail from the report.
It is. And it is important to note for our listeners that this matter is currently under active investigation by the New York State Attorney General. And no charges have been filed at this time.
Right. We are looking at this strictly from an analytical perspective, just trying to understand the sequence of events from the source material.
Exactly. But for safety engineers, I mean, this tragedy is a devastating real-world manifestation of their greatest fear, which is the extreme vulnerability of a pedestrian in a high-speed automotive environment.
When you really try to visualize what stepping out onto a highway shoulder means, it requires a total perspective shift. It isn't like stepping out of your car in a grocery store parking lot.
Not at all.
I keep thinking of it like this. Imagine you are stepping off a boat onto a tiny, crumbling island in the middle of a raging high-speed river.
That's a great way to put it.
Because you go from feeling like this protected driver to suddenly being this completely exposed pedestrian.
It's a very visceral but incredibly accurate way to frame the physics of the situation. There's this jarring psychological disconnect that happens when a driver breaks down.
What do you mean by that?
Well, one second, you are a protected entity, right? You are moving with the flow of traffic, you have a steering wheel, you have mirrors, your brain is processing the environment as a driver.
Right.
But the next second, you open that door and you are suddenly an exposed, stationary pedestrian. But your brain hasn't fully registered that vulnerability yet.
It's like you still feel the residual protection of the car, even though you're just standing outside of it.
Yes, exactly. And that psychological lag is completely at odds with the physical reality. When we look at this from a pure physics standpoint, the disparity in kinetic energy is almost incomprehensible to the human mind.
It really is.
You have a human body, which is, soft, fragile, and stand perfectly still. And right next to it, you have vehicles weighing 3, 4, or even 40 tons moving at highway speeds.
The energy involved is terrifying when you actually stop to think about it.
Oh, it's massive. The human brain, from an evolutionary standpoint, is not equipped to accurately calculate the kinetic energy of a 3-ton object moving at 65 miles per hour.
Because we didn't evolve with cars.
Right. We evolved to judge threats moving at running speeds, a predator, a falling rock, things like that. When you are inside your car moving at that same speed, the relative difference between you and the other cars feels manageable. You are all sort of floating in the same current.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But the moment you are stationary on the side of the road, the physics become entirely unforgiving. A slight drift by a passing driver, a momentary distraction to check a dashboard screen, or even just the aerodynamic drag, like the gust of wind from a passing tractor trailer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the wind alone.
That wind can easily pull a person off balance. The margin for error drops to absolute zero.
Which naturally makes you wonder, why do people end up standing on the shoulder in the first place? I mean, if it is this dangerous, if it is literally like standing on that crumbling island in a raging river, why don't we just stay in the car?
It's a fair question.
But if we look at the data from the report surrounding these incidents, the scenarios that force drivers out of their vehicles are shockingly mundane.
That's the most unsettling part, honestly. We aren't talking about people doing reckless things for thrill-seeking purposes. The situations that lead to these tragedies are everyday occurrences.
Like what specifically?
It's mechanical breakdowns, tire blowouts, minor collisions, vehicle fires, or simply drivers attempting to inspect a weird sound, or, just waiting for roadside assistance to arrive.
Wait, hold on. I need to stop you right there. Because if someone clips my bumper, say we're in stop-and-go traffic that suddenly opens up and I get into a minor fender bender, my immediate overwhelming instinct is to put the car in park, open my door, and step out to check the damage. I think that's the instinct of almost anyone listening to this. You want to see what happened to your car. Are you seriously telling me that completely natural instinct to check my property is actually the most dangerous thing I can do?
I am. That instinct is exactly what makes the secondary collisions so deadly. This is where human psychology actively betrays us.
Really?
Yes. In behavioral economics and psychology, there's a concept called loss aversion. We are hardwired to acutely feel the pain of losing something or having our property damaged.
Right, okay.
So when you hear that crunch on your bumper, your brain zeroes in on that immediate problem. You want to assess the damage, you want to get the other driver's insurance information, you want to regain a sense of control over the situation.
Right, my brain is just screaming, look at the bumper, fix the bumper.
Exactly. Your brain hyperfocuses on the localized threat of the damaged property, and in doing so, it completely overrides your awareness of the massive existential threat roaring past you at 70 miles per hour. By stepping out to solve the small problem, you are walking right into the path of the secondary collision.
Let's really dig into that term, the secondary collision, because understanding that sequence seems to be the key to this whole crisis.
The term is literal. A secondary collision refers to the crash that happens after the initial event. The data shows that many fatal highway accidents are not caused by the initial tire blowout or the engine failure or that minor fender bender you just mentioned.
Right.
The fatality occurs in the secondary phase when the drivers or passengers step out and find themselves exposed as pedestrians to fast-moving traffic. The initial problem is really just the setup.
It's the trap.
It is entirely a trap. And the mechanism that springs that trap is visibility, specifically how the human brain processes visual information at high speeds.
So it's about what the other drivers can actually see.
Yes, this is the terrifying reality of highway driving. An approaching driver simply may not see a person standing near a disabled vehicle until it is entirely too late to brake or swerve.
Okay, we need to unpack why that is.
Duh.
Because on the surface, that sounds ridiculous. If it's broad daylight and I'm wearing a bright red sweater standing next to a gray car on the shoulder, shouldn't a driver approaching me see a person standing there?
In a normal environment, sure. But a highway is not a normal environment. We have to look at the neuroscience of cognitive load and what happens to our field of vision at high speeds.
Okay.
When you are operating a vehicle at 65 or 70 miles per hour, your brain is under a massive cognitive burden. To handle the overwhelming amount of visual data rushing at you, your brain does something called tunneling.
Towing.
It literally narrows your field of peripheral vision to focus almost exclusively on the center of the road ahead.
So my brain is intentionally ignoring the margins of the road just to process the speed I'm traveling.
Precisely. It's filtering out unnecessary data to keep you from being overwhelmed. Furthermore, your brain is actively pattern matching. It is scanning for specific
Like
things.
what?
The rectangular shape of other cars, glowing red brake lights, reflective license plates, flashing yellow turn signals. It is cognitively primed to look for large, metallic, moving objects.
So it's not looking for humans.
No, it is not primed to look for a relatively small, vertical human silhouette blending into the guardrail or standing in the shadow of a car, because humans don't belong on a highway.
Wow.
So when a driver is approaching, their eyes might physically sweep over you, but their brain filters you out as background noise. By the time the visual data penetrates that filter and their brain registers the pattern and says, wait, that is a person standing outside a car.
Too late.
Right, and then sends the electrical signal down the spinal cord to the foot to hit the brake, well, the vehicle has already traveled hundreds of feet.
So by the time they realize you are there, the physics have already taken over, the math is just completely against you.
Exactly. That is why standing outside to wait for a tow truck or bending down to inspect your scraped bumper is an incredibly high-stakes gamble. You are essentially betting your life on the reaction time, the visual acuity, and the undivided attention of every single driver passing by.
And in an era of touchscreen dashboards and smartphone distractions, that is a terrible bet to make.
It really is.
That is deeply, deeply unsettling. And the danger isn't evenly distributed either. The report points out that if you look at the data for the Northeast, there's a specific regional danger zone where this risk is massively amplified.
Yes, the geography and the civil engineering of the region play a huge role. The New York metro area, particularly the corridors connecting New York City to its northern suburbs, represents a unique convergence of heavy traffic and legacy infrastructure.
We're talking about an extraordinary volume of heavy commuter traffic flowing constantly, right? Across Westchester County, White Plains, Yonkers, and down into the city. And anyone who lives here and regularly drives these specific Northeast roads knows their unique layout. We are talking about the high-speed corridors mentioned in the source, I-87, which is the New York State Thruway, where the Clarkstown incident happened.
Right.
It's also I-287, the Hutchinson River Parkway, the Bronx River Parkway, the Sawmill River Parkway, and the Cross County Parkway, the Major Deegan Expressway, and of course, the Cross Bronx Expressway.
And if you travel those routes, you instinctively understand why they are so prone to secondary collisions. These are not flat, straight, wide-open interstate highways in the middle of a desert where you have a three-mile unobstructed line of sight.
Not at all. Especially the parkways.
Yeah.
I mean, they have this winding, scenic design. You have beautiful stone arch bridges, but you also have incredibly tight curves, blind hills, and overpasses.
And the shoulders are shocking.
Yeah. In many places, the shoulder is just a few inches of dirt, or it simply disappears completely against a jagged rock wall or a steel guardrail.
Right. Now take that infrastructure and force modern, heavy commuter traffic through it at 65 or 70 miles per hour. Drivers are aggressive, cars are packed densely together, and the physical space is drastically constricted.
It leaves literally zero margin for error. If you get a flat tire on a blind curve on the Cross Bronx or the Sawmill, you are completely boxed in. You can't pull over far enough to be safe.
Which brings us to the most critical mechanical factor of all, which is rapidly changing visibility. The layout you just described vividly illustrates why the secondary collision is so prevalent here.
How so?
Well, on these heavy commuter routes, the transition from moving traffic to a sudden stopped obstruction happens faster than human reaction time allows. This dramatically increases the risk of a catastrophe.
Let's actually think about what that math looks like in real time. Because I think people hear reaction time and think it means an instant. But it doesn't.
No, it definitely doesn't.
If I'm doing 60 miles per hour on the Sawmill River Parkway, I am covering almost 90 feet every single second. Specifically, 88 feet a second.
Right. Keep that number in mind, 88 feet per second. Now, average human reaction time, and this is under ideal conditions, assuming the driver is paying attention, not looking at their phone or adjusting the radio, is about 1.5 seconds.
A second and a half.
Yes. It takes roughly 3/4 of a second for your brain to perceive the hazard and decide to stop, and another 3/4 of a second for your brain to command your foot to lift off the gas and press the brake pedal.
Okay, so if I'm covering 88 feet a second and it takes me a second and a half just to react,
right.
I mean, I have traveled over 130 feet before my foot even touches the brake pedal, before the car even begins to physically slow down.
Exactly. You've covered 132 feet of asphalt while your brain and body are just trying to communicate. Now, add in the actual braking distance of a heavy vehicle.
Oh, man.
If you were coming around one of those blind, tight curves on the Hutchinson River Parkway, and your line of sight suddenly reveals a disabled vehicle sitting on a non-existent shoulder, with a driver stepping out to look at a flat tire, and the distance from the curve to that person is only 150 feet.
The outcome is already decided. It is mathematically impossible to avoid the collision. You literally do not have enough physical road left to stop the vehicle.
It is mathematically guaranteed. And the tragic irony is that the person stepping out of their disabled car has absolutely no idea about the math that is bearing down on them.
Because they're just thinking about their car.
Right. They just heard a clunk, managed to pull over against a rock wall, and thought, I need to check my tire. Their brain is focused on the flat tire, completely ignorant of the fact that a driver coming around the bend behind them literally cannot stop in time, even if they slam on the brakes the absolute millisecond they see them.
That makes my stomach drop. Because you realize how fragile the whole system is. We are all trusting that everyone else can see us when the science and the math clearly show that they can't.
That is precisely why safety experts are sounding the alarm so loudly. The risk is astronomical, especially in these regional danger zones connecting Westchester County and New York City. The density of the cars, the excessive speed of travel, and the unforgiving geometry of the historical roads create a perfect deadly storm.
So if you are listening to this right now, maybe you are on your commute, sitting in traffic on the Major Deegan or cruising down I-287. Look at the shoulder next to you. Look at the concrete barrier. And ask yourself, if my engine died this exact second, losing all power, what is my plan?
It's a vital question.
How would you safely maneuver to the edge? But more importantly, how would you force yourself to stay inside the vehicle, keeping your seatbelt on? Who would you call first?
Having that mental script pre-written is just so essential. You cannot wait until the tire blows to figure out what to do. Because when the noise happens and the adrenaline dumps into your system, the panic hits.
And you just act on instinct.
Exactly. And in a panic, you won't have the cognitive bandwidth to weigh the pros and cons of stepping out. Your loss aversion will kick in. Your instincts will scream at you to get out and look at the damage. You need to have decided right now, in the calm of this moment, that you will override that instinct.
Because the safety profile of an emergency situation changes the absolute second you decide to open your car door on a major highway.
It completely reframes how you view a breakdown. It transforms from a mechanical inconvenience into a high-stakes survival situation where patience and containment are your only viable tools.
You just have to sit there.
Yes. You have to sit there and wait for professional help, like a highway patrol or a tow truck with massive, highly visible flashing lights to secure the scene behind you. You need to know instinctively that the metal cage surrounding you is your absolute best defense against the chaotic environment outside.
To kind of tie everything up and connect this back to the absolute core of the issue, what is a final thought we can leave the listener with?
Well, I want to leave everyone with a final lingering concept to ponder. Think about the vehicle you drive, whether it's a sedan, an SUV, or a truck. Modern automobiles are quite literally billion-dollar engineering marvels.
Right, they really are.
They're the result of decades of intense scientific research, crash testing, and computer modeling. They are essentially designed as mobile, highly sophisticated suits of armor.
They're like advanced survival pods.
They are. They are equipped with advanced crumple zones designed to absorb kinetic energy. They have reinforced steel pillars, side curtain airbags, frontal airbags, seatbelt pretensioners, all painstakingly engineered to protect the fragile human body inside from the immense forces of a crash.
This protective shell.
Exactly. But the absolute exact moment you pull that interior door handle, push the door open, and step out onto the shoulder to check a flat tire or inspect a scratched bumper, every single piece of that billion-dollar safety engineering instantly vanishes.
You have voluntarily abandoned the armor. And you are left standing in normal clothes, completely soft and unprotected, pitted against the very same high-speed transportation system those defenses were built to protect you from.
You essentially stepped off the firing range observation deck and right into the line of fire. It really puts it into perspective. Next time, let the professionals handle the road. Stay in the armor.